Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, as I mentioned yesterday on Woke Wednesday, today's conversation with our friend, our in-house doctor, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, is going to be our reflection on this week, marking the 4-year anniversary since COVID was named a global health pandemic. And what I can tell you is that, you know, I put up a couple of videos on TikTok and on Instagram, and it is so disheartening to me. And I know that there are trolls and, you know, and all of those things, but it is so disheartening to me to put up these videos that really encourage us to reflect on this time. And people respond with, like, it was a hoax, it was the flu, it was, you know, it didn't matter. And I'm just like, the distortion and the misinformation, the chosen ignorance is just wildly disheartening. I don't know what else to say about it. But I do know that for the rest of us, particularly the Woke AF engaged, wonderful audience that you are, that we need to be reminded of the trauma that we have gone through and continue to go through, to reflect on what we lost and also what we gained, right? And how our lives have changed. You know, I mentioned yesterday that how I got started in this conversation was with my mom, who celebrated a birthday this week, and her birthday coincides with, you know, now the shutdown of the world and her brain surgery and all of these things. So it's a notable time for us each year over the last 4 years. And, you know, so when she was teaching yoga this week, she did exactly what I did on the show, which was, you know, kind of have her students think about and reflect on the last 4 years, where they were 4 years ago in 2020, how their lives have changed. You know, have they given any stock to that change, right? Like, are they asking their friends and their family how they really are, how they have been managing, you know? Or have we just gone back to business as usual? I'm good. Things are great. You know, lies. And, you know, and she said that it was really powerful, that folks were really appreciative, because I think that we need to give ourselves and each other the permission, right, to publicly be able to grieve in a lot of ways, the ways that our lives have been turned upside down. And that, you know, many of us are looking for the opportunity to share our truth and be vulnerable about the ways that we are different, about the losses that we have suffered, and about the purposeful changes that we have made, the shifts that we have made in our lives. You know, and I offer to all of you this coming weekend, like, reach out to your friends, your family, you know, offer it up, you know, to ask people how they're doing. Man, it's been 4 years. Like, isn't it wild? Like, how have you been managing? And just see what happens. Because unfortunately, without direct leadership from the top, giving us as a country the opportunity to collectively grieve, which I think would be incredibly powerful, it has been politicized, as evidenced by some of the comments that you wouldn't see because I've deleted them because I don't want that shit lingering on my page. But to deny people the opportunity to grieve real loss of life, of livelihood, of stability, is to deny each other's humanity. And that's why we're in the predicament, the shit show that we're in right now, because of the forces at play that are working to dismantle our humanity, our values, our shared morals. So how do we put those pieces back together? It begins with recognizing ourselves and each other, providing grace and space for necessary conversations. So coming up next, my conversation with our friend, our in-house doctor, Dr. Jonathan Metzl. Folks, you know that whenever we have the opportunity to speak with our in-house doctor, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, I am always thrilled. And I'm thrilled this week, honestly, because Jonathan, this month is the 4-year anniversary since COVID was named a global health pandemic by the WHO, by the CDC, and our worlds were altered in March of 2020. And what I find so troubling as I do my own reflection, because for my family, for folks that had been listening to me for those 4 years, you know, March 2020 was when my mother was diagnosed with a brain tumor. She went in for brain surgery the day before everything shut down. And thank God we were able to, you know, have the surgery, get her home and recover. And because of COVID, we were able for her to recover and heal as a full family. So for us, it is a time of like deep reflection and gratitude. But Jonathan, what I realize as I do my own reflections every year and my family does theirs, that collectively, as a country, we just pretend that this traumatic, world-stopping event where over a million Americans lost their lives didn't happen.
I mean, I've been thinking about this so much, so I'm so glad we're talking about it for the history of the world, for the history of everything we know, but also for our own history, right? You and I started talking, as you say, all these things, but you and I started our conversations because we were like, holy crap, when's the world going to go back together? And that's what started our weekly conversations. And so it's also our
anniversary. Yeah, you know, happy anniversary.
I know, I didn't get you anything. I'm sorry. But this part of the story is like, it just feels like, and I'm thinking of Eric Klinenberg's new book, like the world broke and we never put it back together is kind of what it feels like. And so it's funny, like I'm going to give you an example that is not related to COVID for how I've been thinking, which is, and I think I've talked about this before, but it was like the middle of the night and I watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And the crazy thing was, here's Ferris Bueller. He hangs out with his friends. He like ditches school. They steal the car. They go to the Cubs game. They go to a parade. But the whole thing is, the movie was made like a year before cell phones. And so all these people are like doing all this stuff, but they couldn't conceive that they could have ever just called. Like they keep stopping to go to a payphone or something. Ferris Bueller would have been busted in 5 seconds if he had a cell phone. He wouldn't have had a day off. And so there was something that happened that irreparably changed everybody's consciousness. And now when you watch it, you're like, why is this guy getting to ditch school? Just track his phone.
Right.
But nobody, you watch millions of people in the movie dancing in Chicago. Nobody could have conceived in a just sort of way that a technology was going to come and change everybody's perception about the basic premise of the movie. And the other thing about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which again is the most random right turn, but it's like, if you watch it again, people aren't on cell phones, which is kind of weird to watch a world where people aren't on cell phones. And then if they would have done Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like even 5 years later, nobody would have looked each other in the eye. Everybody would have been like, hold on one sec, can I get a picture of that for Instagram or something like that? So it's just funny that like things happen that change our perception. That happens all the time in big ways and small ways. And I feel like for me, that's kind of the story of COVID, but in a really bad way, which is there are all these massive things that happened, like a million zillion people died and they're gone. And there's no, you know, it's funny, like think about it in the beginning, like we had music tributes and memories and it was kind of We Are the World and all the opera singers got together. And then everybody just got, it's just the loss of life was so unending and overwhelming that everybody was, we just have normalized it in a way. So part of it is the loss of life, but the other part is just the way it changed we relate to the world. Like people feel to me, and this is my question for you, people feel less social. They feel less communal. They feel more tired. Just rallying people to do things is harder. The perception of like what it means to like leave your apartment is just so different. Perception of what it means to work feels different. The perception of what politics means is so different. And so for me, there's the massive things, which are death. And then there's the subtle things, which are just how it changed how we think about things we never thought about, like going 5 days a week in the office. Of course, yeah, that's what I do. And I like my colleagues and stuff. And now people don't want to go in 2 days a week and they're working from home and they're more isolated, but maybe more productive. Like it just everything changed our perception. To me, that's the enduring thing, which I think really has profound political implications also.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
The big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And I think that that's right, that our perception on everything has shifted in such a dramatic way. And I love the analogy that you gave to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because like the whole premise of the movie, like you said, wouldn't have even been able to like get off of, you know, get out of somebody's idea and into a script, because it would have been like, he'll be found in 2 seconds or caught in 2 seconds. Somebody will snap a picture and post it and boom, you know where he is. That also just makes me sad about the loss of anonymity in a deep way as well. But to the perception piece about how we work, how we live, how we gather, how we connect, all of these fundamental things that make us human, that make our society tick, have changed, and we don't reflect on it at all. And I think that that is something, and I don't know, because you travel internationally more for work than I ever do. And I want to know from your conversations and travels, do other countries have a deeper reflection because of, and people love to say, like, you know, Donald Trump didn't change anything, blah, blah. And I'm just like, the fact that we don't have a remembrance for those that we lost to COVID, the fact that there isn't like a moment of silence collectively every year, the fact that there is going to be no real coverage on the news of those that we lost and remembering this time and kind of like, you know, having this reflection is deeply American, because we love to forget things. We love to bury them and pretend that they didn't happen, i.e. slavery, right? So I'm just wondering, for you, with your international community, is there a difference in terms of how people look at this anniversary?
Well, yes. And let me say three things, but the first is actually going to answer the question before, because I have one more thing to say about this. I taught a class for a long time on COVID and society. We started teaching it in the second month.
I spoke a bunch.
And so for me, the most telling thing, and I'll get to the international thing in a second, but let's just hold on to the first thought for one more minute, which is that for me, the most powerful, and I'll tell you in a bit, we stopped teaching that class. It got too intense, because people in the beginning, and they were all like, we are the world and we're on the same team. And by the end, like, to get people to even talk about masks, they were going to kill each other. Like, it was so, people were so divided. And that's part of the story for me, is one thing about the pandemic. Another thing is that we spend so much more time on social media and on our computers and our phones than we did before, even though we had them available. And so it's so much easier to divide people. Like, the level of like manipulation, like, remember in the beginning of the pandemic, everybody's like, oh, there's misinformation and disinformation, and we have to stop it for real information. But now, like, we are so susceptible to being divided in every way possible. And so that's number one. But number two, and I'm just rambling crazy today, but the most powerful thing we would do in this class, I'm going to ask you this question, is we would tell the students, look at a video clip of you before the pandemic. Or if you don't have one, look at a picture of you, but look at a clip. What didn't you know that you know now? In other words, what information or knowledge or perception, the way people would do this for like war, like before and after the war, what didn't you know? Look at yourself before the war. Oh, I was so innocent. What didn't you know before the pandemic that you would tell yourself now? And we would ask, we had 150 students in the class, we would tell them to go back to their prior self and tell them a story about what you know now that you didn't know then. Now, do you mind if I put you on the spot and ask you that question?
Yeah, there's so much that I didn't. But I'm trying to think of like, what would be that one thing that I would tell myself in March 2019? Yeah, that you can still, I would say this, that like your ability to build connection in person is critical, but you can build connections virtually with people, right? Like if you were never able to go outside, like there is way to continue to like deepen friendships and like build community, but being in person is something that like is needed, right? I think that that's the thing that I would tell myself, because I'm a very social person. And, you know, a person that if I allow my calendar to dictate my life would be filled with stuff to do all the time. And so the other part is that, like, you don't have to have busy work. Like, you can just slow down, right? Like, that is, you know, that your productivity is not your worth. So those are two things that I would, like, say. What did your students say? What did you say?
I said that the connections that you take for granted are much more fragile than you realize. In other words, like all the assumptions about common good or health or well-being are just there, you know, I felt like I lived in an enlightened era because, you know, my dad escaped the Holocaust and we came to America and this is democracy and all these kind of things. And I just would tell myself that the bonds are strong, but they're much more susceptible than you ever realized about everything, things you really assumed as core of a civilization. So for me, that's it. The students were, it was really sad because most of them said like my life could get derailed at any moment, you know, or
yeah,
like, you know, because a lot of them lost scholarships or lost years of playing sports or lost things like that. So for them, it was kind of like shit could go south at any minute. And so it was more like prepare, that kind of thing. But it was also, you know, we love Zoom and we have all these technologies and you can spend more time on your iPhone than you ever wanted. But I'd be curious now to do it again. It was great the first 3 years. And then there was just the division in the class got to be really intense. And it wasn't just division about COVID. It was division about race, the things that we easily talked about. Like we easily talked about race that first year. And by the third year, I would say stuff like, you know, it turns out like tons of working class poor white Americans died of COVID. And then one student would say, well, they deserved it for not getting vaccines. And somebody else would say, you're anti-white race. Like it just got really intense. And that's what you do in college. You talk about it, but it
yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah.
But it was just, you know, we just thought like, man, maybe we can reframe this. So now I have a more cheerful class about guns in America, but no, so it was just interesting to see that. So I would say that to me that what I'm talking about is a kind of global phenomenon in some ways. Now I think America, it's more intense in a way. It certainly feels more intense because there was this movement rising. So all these things happened about, you know, this happened when Trump was president, and then the sedition to overthrow the government and all these things, and George Floyd, everything happened that kind of manifested it. But I have, as you know, a lot of relatives in Israel. They were like in the beginning out there clapping on their balconies for the healthcare workers. And now that country has been like ripped in a million pieces, and it's very similar, right? A lot of the hardcore right-wing people are buying guns and they're anti-science and they're obviously pulling them into even worse war. So this idea of like, we're all going to come together there. I know people are just becoming quite tribal because this thing spread. I have a lot of colleagues in Europe. I guess the one place, and I don't know, this is naive maybe, but I'm part of a project in Scandinavia where they're doing this thing called the COVID Narratives Project, which is like, what's the narrative of COVID that people can memorialize and talk about and imply. And so I'm curious where Scandinavia fits in. Now, I'll tell you my theory about all this is that there's this sociological theory called social cohesion, which is basically that countries that have shared infrastructure or build shared infrastructure during something like a pandemic end up coming out of it better. An example not from COVID is like the UK during World War II, for example. You know, London was being bombed and blockaded, and the British government said, okay, we're going to nationalize access to healthcare. We're going to democratize access to food because everybody should be taken care of at a time when we're all facing a common enemy. And it turned out then when World War II ended, they had the framework for the NHS and social welfare programs and all these kind of things that helped the country. And Scandinavia is kind of similar. Like there's good infrastructure and a bunch of other things too. So I would bet that countries that have like shared collaborative resources and don't like all go like, this is my resource and not yours, which is what we're doing.
Yeah.
I bet those are the countries, but that reminds me, I'll check back in on Scandinavia and I'll report back. I'm curious.
Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty, beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Before COVID, and this is somebody, I am somebody who built a career off of public service, right? Like, worked on Capitol Hill, worked in nonprofit organizations, like, you know, was a teacher, all of these things. And so very much believe in the public good. But something that I didn't honestly realize until COVID was how important leadership is in this country. And that is something that I took wholeheartedly for granted, even going through the Bush years, right? Where, you know, you had a president fly over Black people dying in New Orleans because of Katrina, right? And not sending in aid, but somehow, you know, you have celebrities that are sending in 18-wheeler trucks to provide water, right? So it is to recognize how different I think that America would be right now if Donald Trump had not been the president, had we not had a president that had turned the virus into a racial slur, had we not had a president that told people not to wear a mask and that, you know, to keep states open was to liberate them, right? And did not put the public health forward, told people to shoot up bleach and light, you know, that if you removed Donald Trump, the Trump administration and MAGA, if it had been Hillary Clinton, if it had been Obama, and it happened during the Obama years, like, what a vast difference I think that we would be in right now. I think that America would have been stronger and more united because we would have seen COVID as like a shared responsibility instead. I mean, you would have still had those people who want to grift and a price gouge, and that happens all of the time. But I think that there would have been much more of a community building and shared humanity if we had had the right leadership.
Yeah, I mean, it's that you really need that, right? Because, you know, I have much more to say about that. You know, there were all these moments early in the pandemic when people were wondering, is this thing going to be polarized or is it going to be unifying? And remember, Trump, 2 months into the pandemic, the Trump administration filed a brief with the Supreme Court to like overturn the entire Affordable Care Act. They blocked health care. They blocked Medicaid reform in red states. Like, all these ways they signaled that it's not just politics as usual, but it's an opportunity for us to like get ahead. You know, by profiteering in a way in this horrible moment. And so it became what's called a polarizing crisis, where people's divisions really were enhanced. Now, I will say that the thing about COVID is that it just went on so long, like it was almost beyond comprehension. Usually people think of before and after, and then we can do a memorial, and then we can do a statue and all these things. And it just defied all that because it's still floating around. And so I think part of the issue was it just wasn't conceivable for us. And it certainly wasn't conceivable for people like Trump, just what was being faced in a certain kind of way. And then there's, of course, all this retrospective, like, oh, of course I knew that this wasn't going to work. Of course I knew vaccines and all this kind of crap. But like, everybody was just scrambling. You know, I trust the people who know what they're doing, everybody was just scrambling. It wasn't like we had a model for it. So I completely agree with you about leadership. You know, ironically, economically, we came out better than anybody, but there's a kind of interesting reason why that is, which is that we had migrants who did a lot of the jobs and kept our economy going up. And so a lot of people that are now, if the Republicans win, going to be blocked. But so there are all these stories. So it's just, man, it's so intense. It's like this half hour flew by because
I know
it's so intense to think about it.
Yeah. It is. It's just like, you know, but you're the person that I wanted to have this conversation with, because you're right in remembering that our entire conversation weekly came out of, we don't know what the hell is going on. So let us just like do what we can do, you know, to speak to each other, to speak to the audience and kind of get through this moment. But even to be on the other side, I can't really say, to your point, that we've made it to the other side. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe in another 6 years, when it's been 10 years, who knows where America, our democracy, like, our, you know, where we will be at all. But it's just, it's wild to reflect on your 2019 self and today. So I'll give you the last thoughts.
Well, just that the election really matters. I mean, I'm kind of stating the obvious, but part of the reason we can even have this conversation is that we had the shadow of a functioning public health infrastructure. Trump is now saying if they win, they're going to destroy the CDC. They're going to end every vaccine thing. They're going to end all this stuff. And so, you know, I would just say that the lessons are still pretty urgent about why the election matters and public health. It would seem to be like on the top three of the list. It's not for a lot of people, but it should be, because if we do away with research about how to treat illness and public health infrastructure and stuff like that, then 10 years from now,
smallpox will be back, you know,
like polio, all these things, stuff we never heard of. And so I just think that it really ties into like why the reason number like 958 about why the election is so urgent is about one side clearly is using the pandemic to talk about destroying the public health infrastructure and that really can't, and healthcare infrastructure. And to me, that would lead to a very different and much sicker country. And the other side is saying, let's learn from this and boost our well-being. So to me, that's a pretty straightforward choice.
As always, my friend, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, appreciate you. Happy anniversary to you.
Yeah, you
4
too.
Years of,
oh my God.
Of conversations on Woke AF, our own narrative. Really, really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's keep going, everybody.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF. As always, power to the people and to all the people. Power, get woke and stay woke as fuck.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.